And now, it's sports time, featuring forecasts, plot synopsis, character studies, explanations, and interviews, making sports accessible to everyone from the diehard to the hardly interested. With your host, Ezra Fisher, it's the Dear Sports Fan Podcast.
Hi, everyone. The Super Bowl is coming up soon. If you're like the one-third of the country that watched last year's game, you'll probably be planning to watch some of the game this Sunday. This year's Super Bowl teams are the New England Patriots and Seattle Seahawks. The game starts at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday, February 1st, and it will be televised on NBC. To help prepare you to enjoy the game and maybe even show off a little for your friends and family on Sunday, I asked my friend Brendan to come up with five things to watch for, and I came up with five myself. So without further ado, here are the 10 things to watch for if you're going to watch the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, absolutely. The first thing that I will watch for is the joint health of the Seattle Seahawks secondary. Two of their best players in the secondary, which are the guys who are responsible for covering wide receivers, hurt their shoulder and their elbow last week. One of them could barely use his left arm for most of last week. And there was a lot of talk this week about how one of the players on the Patriots said that he would tell his teammates to go after them and hit them in the joints that they hurt last week to see if they could knock them out of the game altogether. But even if they don't do that, if either of those two guys is impacted and can't play to the level they normally do, that could be a significant development in the game because they're the strength of the Seahawks defense. And if they can't take away Gronkowski and the other key receivers on the Patriots, then this game gets much harder for the Seahawks. So we'll be watching both their health and also for any signs that the Patriots are blatantly going out of their way to target them.
Yeah,
and their joints.
I think it's so. I don't know. I'm going to stay away from the joint jokes since I think it is legal in Washington State. But I think we're looking at Richard Sherman's elbow and Earl Thomas's shoulder, I believe.
Yeah.
And I think the player on the Patriots who made a point of saying that they should target those joints was a guy named Brandon Browner, who was on the Seahawks last year. So he's a former teammate of them.
Played in the same position group with them.
Yeah, yeah. And I think they, if I remember right, I think the Seahawks' response was to say that they, quote, love him like a brother, and that they would do the same to him.
Yeah, like brothers.
Yeah, like brothers do, which actually is,
you find a weakness and you pick on it.
Exactly. Yeah. I follow a guy named Craig Zumsteg, I think is his name, on Twitter. And he's got a really interesting blog. I'll pull it up right now.
Did you start following him on Twitter because his name is Craig Zumsteg?
No, his name is just a bonus. So Craig Zumsteg writes on a blog called questionabletostart.com. He's kept a personal database of injuries in the NFL and how long people are out based on those injuries for the last 5 or 6 years. And so he does his own predictions about whether people are going to come back in time to play, the next game or 3 games from now or whenever. And he thinks that both of those players should be fine in the Super Bowl, but perhaps not if they get hit again. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right. So my first thing that I was interested in watching is he's a pretty big guy, Vince Wilfork. He's a defensive tackle on the New England Patriots. And he's going to be, if the Patriots start out on defense, I'm going to be watching him for the first 10 plays and virtually nothing else. New England was really good on rush defense this year, and Seattle was the absolute best in the league at rush offense. And looking at it even closer, Seattle ran to the right more than any team in the league. Teams this year that ran to the right did it less against the Patriots because, in part, Vince Wilfork lines up over on the right. And he is the colossus at the heart of the Patriots' defense. He's 6'2", 325 pounds, according to official NFL sources. But as this guy Michael David Smith of NBC Sports pointed out, he was listed at about 344 in college. It doesn't look like he's lost weight. So 325 seems like an understatement.
Yeah, well, I think they always underreport weight and overreport height, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how those things go.
He's probably actually about 6'1", 365, something like that. He's also a freak athlete. He claims he can still dunk a basketball, which I would pay to watch. And, you know, for me, focusing on him, football is just a really simple game sometimes. If the Seahawks can run, they'll probably win. If they can't, they'll probably lose. And if you watch Will Fork, if he gets pushed backwards on plays, Seattle's probably going to be able to run. And if he pushes the offensive line forwards a step, Seattle probably won't be able to run. So just watch big number 75. If he moves forward, the Patriots are going to win the game. If he moves back, the Patriots are going to lose that game. So, you know, for me, it's that simple.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Although I do think
it's a gross oversimplification, but
yeah, but it gets at a larger point, which is that I don't think either of us thinks that Russell Wilson can win this game if he has to throw it. If the Seahawks are turned into primarily a passing team, then I don't think there's any way they can win the game.
Yeah.
But it's also an interesting, their running game is a little bit different than some of the other teams' running games. And I feel like they use a lot more misdirection with the zone read and everything, and it's got to be more challenging for a guy like Vince Wilfork, who would love to do nothing other than just push the guy in front of him out of the way or back as fast as possible, but they can actually use that against him with some of their misdirection stuff. So,
yeah, I think that's true. I think the misdirection and the zone read is a little bit slower developing, though. So if Wilfork is getting a good push in the center, it's going to make that harder. But you're right. The other guy, if it's not Vince Wilfork, is number 96, Cialvar Siliga, who is also an ex-Seahawk, I think. I could be wrong about that. Anyway, he's the other guy who plays in that position, and he looks a lot like Wilfork. He wears number 96, and he is also listed at 6'2 and 325, but is probably a lot bigger.
Yeah. Well, this is, yeah. I mean, this is the kind of the players in the league, like Vince Wilfork and Haloti Ngata, who literally just get paid to take up space and also simultaneously be freakish athletes, but basically just not to get pushed around, which is always fun to watch, and also to realize that he's 350 pounds and you would not be able to run away from him if he was chasing you. or come even close.
This is what you think a lot about during while you watch football games, right?
Where
you could run away from them.
Yeah, and basically the answer is the punter. Right. And even in some cases, I'm not sure I could.
Yeah.
So kind of going off that, my next thing is Bill Belichick's brain against Russell Wilson's brain. Mm. For a while, Bill Belichick, it's kind of fallen off now, but Bill Belichick had a reputation as the kind of guy who could take a great quarterback and design a defense specifically to confuse him and befuddle him and make him look rather pedestrian. And the most famous example of this was historically with Peyton Manning, who looked phenomenal against everyone else. But there was a few years there where he was great in every game except when he would play Bill Belichick, and somehow Bill Belichick would always come up with something specifically to make his life miserable. And so now that he's had 2 weeks to prepare for the Super Bowl, and Russell Wilson, even though he's, you know, mature beyond his years, is, you know, generally supposed to be smart. The question is, you know, he's still young. And the question is, can Bill Belichick design something in 2 weeks to make Russell Wilson's life a living hell? And if he does, is Russell Wilson sharp enough and smart enough on his feet at this stage of his career to adapt to whatever it is that Bill Belichick comes up with? And of course, it's not just Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll will be helping him, but it is kind of, it usually boils down to the quarterback seeing something on the field that maybe he has never seen before, thanks to Bill Belichick's innovation.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think to some extent, Belichick doesn't have to look farther than what the Green Bay Packers did to Russell Wilson through the first 95% of the game they played against him in the NFC Championship. Because they had, I think Russell Wilson had 4 interceptions and only about 95 yards of passing with, you know, 2.5 minutes to go before everything went to hell for the Packers and the Seahawks really won the game. But it, you know, that there's your blueprint. It can be done.
Yep.
So that's that'll be interesting. So my second thing is Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch is the Seattle Seahawks running back, and he's a pretty curious figure. I would say he's probably Seattle's best offensive player. He's an unbelievable physical runner. He's got a great nickname, Beast Mode, and literally a colorful gimmick. He eats handfuls of Skittles before and during the game. Fans even get into the act by throwing Skittles onto the field when he scores a touchdown. Lately, though, things have just been getting really, really weird with Marshawn Lynch. He's been stonewalling the media by answering every question with the same one-line answer. This week at Media Day on Tuesday, it was, "I'm just here so I won't get fined." It's not really working. He's been fined $100,000 so far for that. He's also been celebrating his touchdowns by grabbing his crotch. So far, he's racked up to, I think, $30,000 of fines for doing that. All of this seems kind of irreverently funny, but I don't really think it is. I've heard television commentators openly speculating about his mental health, and I think it's sort of an unfair question, but it might be an accurate one. His teammate Richard Sherman, who's super comfortable talking to the media, addressed Lynch's behavior earlier this week. He said, "You know, as teammates, we're angry because we know what certain people do well and we know what they struggle with. Marshawn's talking to the press is the equivalent of putting a reporter on a football field and telling him to tackle Adrian Peterson." And so it's clear, at least to, it seems clear to his teammates that he's actually struggling talking to the press, and these one-liners are not, they're not actually him flipping a middle finger to the press or to the media or to the NFL necessarily. There's some expression of crisis. And so when I heard that, I thought about the crotch grabbing, and I remembered, and this is, you know, the dorkiest thing I could possibly remember, but I remembered an answer that Jay-Z once gave to NPR's Terry Gross about why rappers grab their crotches. And I found it. So what Jay-Z said was, you know, a lot of rock bands tour the world, and this is a direct quote, and they get in rinky-dink clubs and they get bottles thrown at them until they hone their craft, until they become, you know, rock stars. But in hip-hop, the music leads first. Usually you have this hit record, and then you throw this person on stage who's never been on stage before. So they don't have any experience about how to perform in front of people or hold the mic, all these different things you need to know as a performer. So when you get up there, you feel naked, right? So when you feel naked, what's the first thing you do? You cover yourself. That bravado is actually an act of, "I am so nervous right now, I am scared to death, so I'm going to act so tough that I'm going to hide it."
Well, yeah, that's an interesting take.
So if Lynch scores in the Super Bowl, which he probably will, and he grabs his crotch, which I think is pretty likely, the refs are going to penalize him for it. And if the refs have been looking for it during the Seahawks' last game, that game against the Packers we were talking about, we would almost definitely be having a podcast right now previewing a Packers-Patriots Super Bowl. That's how important these penalties are. So in terms of game interest, I feel like this is a big one. And in terms of just overall, what the heck is going on with these people interest, it's also intriguing.
Yeah. Well, I think it also, would be the most talked about Super Bowl moment since the Janet Jackson incident. And he would probably pay the largest Super Bowl fine of anyone in his NFL history, well, would be my guess.
Fun. He's not exposing himself, right? That would be the largest fine.
Well, no, I'm saying since in history, not in the future.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it almost seems compulsive, right? Like, it seems like he can't help it anymore.
Yeah, something tells me he can, and I think he might actually control it. The other interesting thing I saw that Richard Sherman said at Media Day, which is the kind of Super Bowl, pre-Super Bowl day, where it's like a zoo, basically. Everyone who can claim to be a reporter gets together and asks all these inane questions of everyone who's playing in the game. But the one interesting thing that I saw that Richard Sherman said was that the kind of expectations are so uneven that, you know, Marshawn Lynch has to answer questions every week from the press. And, you know, Roger Goodell and the employees in the league of the NFL don't have to answer questions, you know, anywhere near that frequently. So he just kind of called out the double standard, which I thought was interesting, which I still don't think is an excuse for Marshawn Lynch to be that, to be the way he is. I get that he's uncomfortable up there, but, and the other interesting thing I saw was, someone comparing Marshawn Lynch to Bill Belichick and basically saying Bill Belichick doesn't answer any questions at press conferences either. He just, you know, says more words, but doesn't give any more substance at all.
Yeah, I mean, virtually no athlete answers questions, right? They're almost like politicians. They talk after a reporter has talked, but they're not actually answering anything. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely inequalities there, and I think if a player was, I don't know, if a player was sort of more clearly in control of themselves and were being irreverent, you know, with a more purposeful appearance than Lynch, I could get behind that. As it is, it's just a little confusing and concerning. But I don't know, maybe not. Maybe he's, you know, maybe he just is giggling about it afterwards or maybe he's sort of righteously angry at the NFL. I mean, I think we mentioned this in an earlier podcast. The Seahawks have basically been, I don't know, threatening or rumored to be wanting to cut him for the last 2 years. And he's been one of the best players in the NFL. And even so, there's still these rumors that, they're going to cut him after the year. He's not worth it. They're not going to pay him. So I don't doubt that he's got some stuff to be angry about.
Yeah, I just don't. I don't have a hard time buying the argument that he's incredibly uncomfortable in front of the press. I think that explains it better than anything else does. Maybe with a little bit of anger and other stuff thrown in, but
yeah.
I mean, I think the fact that you've seen multiple people from the team say that specifically is the issue, and that they're not mad. I mean, the thing that would make me mad if I was them is if he was doing it on purpose, and that he became the story after every game. No matter what else anyone said in the locker room, he would be the story about, you know, what was the latest thing that he pulled.
Yeah.
But if it's something that he really has very little control over because he's just incredibly anxious about it, then I could see his teammates being more understanding.
Definitely.
So my next point was which running back are we going to see from the New England Patriots? It's a tradition in the Bill Belichick era for different running backs to get different, basically, turns based on the game, and it can sometimes seem arbitrary. Earlier this year, one of their younger running backs, Jonas Gray, had an incredible game, you know, scored 4 touchdowns, ran for 200 yards, and then showed up late to a team meeting that next week and wasn't heard from basically for the rest of the season, even though he's clearly a talented guy. Other weeks they have Shane Vereen, who has a phenomenal name and also is kind of a smaller and more agile running back. So sometimes he's the guy. Other weeks it's LeGarrette Blount, who they basically just snatched from the Pittsburgh Steelers when the Steelers got fed up with him this midway through the season. The Patriots basically picked him up and turned him into a valuable player. So you never know which running back is going to kind of carry the load for them on any given week. But it will be interesting to see. And, you know, part of it is what, you know, Shane Vereen is kind of not as powerful as someone like Jonas Gray and LeGarrette Blount. So if they want to stand, you know, line up across from the Seahawks and just try to ram the ball down their throat, you're more likely to see someone like a Jonas Gray or LeGarrette Blount if they're going to do more kind of throwing the ball and trying to get the ball to people out of the backfield. That's probably more likely to be Shane Vereen. So
yeah,
you just never really know with Bill Belichick which one you're going to get.
Yeah, that's another one of those really early signals I would watch for the first time the Patriots have the ball. If Blount is out there for, you know, 6 of the first 10 offensive plays, I think we can conclude that Belichick thinks he can win by being tougher than the Seahawks. If it's Shane Vereen, it probably means that he thinks he's going to win by being smarter than the Seahawks. So, yeah, that's a great thing to look for. Yeah, my next point, thing to watch for if you're going to watch the Super Bowl is who is covering Rob Gronkowski? Rob Gronkowski is the Patriots' only real superhuman athlete. He is their tight end. He's 6'6", 265 pounds, and he runs like, you know, a self-contained stampeding buffalo herd. He's kind of unbelievable. On the other hand, the Seattle defense is full of freaky athletes, maybe not quite like him, but pretty close. And I'm interested in what the Seahawks does, what the Seahawks defense does to counteract Gronkowski. A lot of teams try to, you know, double or triple team him. The Seahawks generally like to play sort of a zone defense where each player stays, except for their cornerbacks who cover wide receivers one-on-one, each of the rest of the defensive players stay kind of in a spot on the field and cover anyone who comes into it. I don't know if you can do that to Gronkowski. I don't know if you can afford to do that to Gronkowski because he just needs a little bit of room to catch the ball and go. If they do assign someone one-on-one to cover him, it's probably Seahawks safety Cam Chancellor. Chancellor's athletic play has inspired a bunch of nicknames. He's known as Bam Bam Cam, which I think is my favorite. Cam Track, which I actually don't understand.
I don't fully understand that either.
I think it must be a reference to like a video game or a superhero or something that we don't know. He's also known as the Commissioner, which, you know, that's an old school nickname. He was the guy who kept leaping over the offensive line to try to block a field goal a few weeks ago, which set off memes across the internet. You know, this is another one of those things to look for pretty early in the game to see what the Seahawks have decided to do. Or they could just mix it up all game. But basically, if they try to double or triple team Gronkowski, it's going to be up to Tom Brady and the other receivers to win the game. If they try to mark him one-on-one, probably with Cam Chancellor, then that is going to be just a spectacular thing to watch all game.
Yeah, well, the weird thing about Gronkowski is, like a lot of great tight ends, if he's covered, it almost doesn't matter sometimes because he is so big that he can just turn around and box you out. Whether he's covered or not is almost irrelevant. It's a matter of, is he being covered by someone physical enough to keep him from just, turning around and pushing him out of the way and catching the ball, or going up top and catching something that, you know, Tom Brady throws over the linebackers and, you know, in before the safeties, which seems to be his sweet spot.
Yep.
And he kind of lives on, I feel like the zone is exactly where he thrives on, that kind of finding those intermediate open areas in the zones that they'll call holes, and just kind of, and Tom Brady has played long enough that he knows how to look for those.
Yeah. Before we move on from Gronkowski, I was just reading a little bit about his media day performance. He apparently sang Katy Perry songs, and also read an excerpt from an erotic novel written about him.
Yes, I heard about that.
Yeah. Gronkowski.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot to be said about that I'm just not going to say.
All right, we'll move on.
So my fourth is freak on freak, by which I mean, and this kind of gets a little bit at one of the other ones that you, I think, are going to talk about in a minute. But, you know, the Seahawks rely in a running game on Russell Wilson and Marshawn Lynch. And they're both slightly freakish physical specimens. I think matching them on the other side is a guy who could really have a breakout Super Bowl, who is Jamie Collins, who is a kind of hybrid linebacker. He's one of these guys who's incredibly, he's big, he's fast, he's strong, he's always causing havoc in the backfield, and he's exactly, I think, the kind of physical freak who could, you know, take on Marshawn Lynch and bring him down, or blitz and get to Russell Wilson, or, you know, intercept Russell Wilson, or kind of make the kind of crazy physical plays that you seem to need to make to beat the Seahawks. So I think this could be a major coming out party for him if he has the kind of game that I think he's the most physically talented player on the Patriots defense, maybe on the entire Patriots minus Rob Gronkowski. But I think if he plays the way he's played a few times this year, he could really have a huge impact on this game. Probably second only to your boy Vince Wilfork.
Yeah. Jamie Collins is, you always hear commentators say he's one of the best coverage linebackers in the league. And linebacker is a position where you know, you're sort of designed for speed and aggression, and often asked to either rush the quarterback or to try to meet the running back wherever he's going on the field with the ball. So what commentators mean with coverage linebacker is that Jamie Collins is really good at covering a wide receiver or a tight end like a defensive back would. My next point was very close to that. It's who is spying Russell Wilson? So, you know, I wrote a piece about Russell Wilson yesterday on Dear Sports Fan, and I wrote a little bit about his play as a runner. He's deployed, you know, he is a quarterback, but he led all NFL quarterbacks this year in rushing with close to 850 yards and 6 touchdowns. And that would have made him about 15th or 16th best in the league as a running back. He's really good at running the ball. He often does it in these sort of zone read plays, where he's on that play, he has the option of either handing the ball to his running back or running with it himself. And he's deadly on those plays. Really, really good. So containing him as a runner, like you said, is a must for the Patriots defense. One typical strategy for teams facing a mobile quarterback like Russell Wilson is to assign one of their defenders to quote unquote spy the quarterback. What that means is that on a pass play, instead of having that linebacker, like Jamie Collins maybe, rushing the passer to get a sack or defending a wide receiver to keep him from catching the ball, the spy just sort of stands a few feet to a yard or two behind the line of scrimmage where the ball starts at the start of the play, and he keeps his eyes on the quarterback and sort of follows him around as the quarterback moves from side to side. If the quarterback looks like he's going to start running, the player who's spying the quarterback moves in to make the tackle. There's a writer named Bill Barnwell who writes for Grantland.com, and he wrote a really nice long article about the last time these two teams played, which was in 2012. And he found one play where the Patriots seemed to actually have assigned three of their defenders to spy Russell Wilson. It's kind of funny to watch. Wilson has the ball, you know, and he's looking for someone to throw it to, and he keeps moving from side to side. And there are these three Patriots that really aren't doing anything other than moving with him. So obviously that's sort of an extreme example. If the Patriots tried to spy Wilson with three defenders on every play, they would leave so many other gaps that it wouldn't be worth it. But I would expect the Patriots to spy Wilson with at least one player on most plays. And like you suggest, that could be Jamie Collins.
It could be. The other interesting thing about thinking about Russell Wilson as a runner is a lot of when you hear commentators talk about quarterbacks in the NFL running, they say you can't make a career as a running quarterback in the NFL because you know the kind of hits you take wear on you, and you just can't last very long. Russell Wilson runs, you know, a decent amount, not as much as some other quarterbacks have, but he doesn't get hit. He never ever gets hit. And he just seems to know the angles and know where everyone is and know when to slide or when to get out of bounds or how to fall down in any way to avoid taking a serious hit. So it would be interesting to see if they do spy him or if it's Jamie Collins or if it's someone else, whether they can actually rough him up a little bit. Because, he did have a pretty poor game last week. It'd be interesting to see if they can. That's one of the things they always used to do with with Peyton Manning is try to get to him and, you know, push him around and try to be physical with him. So I would love to see what happens, how he responds taking an actual hit.
Yeah. And same goes on the flip side for Tom Brady. That's just about the only thing I've ever seen get Tom Brady off his game is getting hit early in the game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Cool. What's your next thing?
My next thing is who else? So we've kind of talked about the big offensive players. Most of the game plan for the Patriots is going to focus on neutralizing Marshawn Lynch and Russell Wilson in the running game. Most of the game plan for the Seahawks is going to be centered around how do we keep Rob Gronkowski from beating us. And I think the question is going to be who else on the offense is going to step up and make the plays that theoretically should be available with so much attention being paid to those guys. So whether it's one of the running backs on the Patriots or whether it's someone like a Julian Edelman, who's a kind of a short, quick, jitterbuggy wide receiver. And, you know, whether it's someone on the one of the wide receivers on the Seahawks, probably, you know, someone like a Doug Baldwin, or someone like that. Someone, I think, other than the guys that we've talked about already, is going to have to do something. And it doesn't have to be, you know, scoring two touchdowns or putting up hundreds of yards or doing anything crazy like that. Often it's just making one key play, one key third down conversion, doing something like what David Tyree did in that famous Giants Super Bowl where he caught that ball against his helmet, even though it looked like he should have dropped it. But yeah. Someone, I think, other than the guys we've talked about, usually, if history is any guide, ends up making a play. And it'll just be interesting to see who on each side it is.
What's your guess?
I do think it'll be Julian Edelman on the Seahawks.
Patriots.
On the Patriots, yeah. And then I'm going to go with your boy Luke Wilson on the Seahawks.
Ah, stealing a page out of my book. Yeah, so I might suggest, let's see, on the Patriots, maybe Brandon LaFell, who is sort of nominally yep. their number one receiver, but he actually is kind of their third or fourth option on offense. On the Seahawks, I don't know. Robert Turbin? I don't know. Does he even play anymore?
I don't think so.
This is way too inside football for to be fun to listen to. So my last point is that this is kind of the arrogance bowl, and I'm really interested to see which coach makes a mistake trying to be too clever. So the two coaches in this game are both really, 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 really successful. Bill Belichick for the New England Patriots is the longest tenured NFL coach. He's won 3 Super Bowls. He's been to 5. This will be his 6th. He's had a winning record for the last 14 seasons, and he's won more than 10 games in all but one of them. Everything about him, from his sort of schlubby dress to his caustic demeanor in the press conferences, to the way he tricks opponents during games, it just all sort of screams intellectual arrogance. And the Seattle coach, Pete Carroll, is basically the same, although in a different way. So to me, Carroll's arrogance, I think it stems from his boundless faith in himself and his team. He goes for it on fourth downs when other coaches wouldn't. He relies on his players to win one-on-one matchups when other coaches might give them some help. On the sideline, he sort of swaggers around with his chest out. He's constantly chewing gum in a jaunty fashion.
Is there a jaunty fashion?
Yeah, jaunty. It's jaunty chewing gum. This is actually a sponsorship deal. No. I don't know. but you know what I mean. He's just like, I don't know, maybe this is some of my bias showing. I don't really like the Seahawks, but Carroll just seems equally arrogant to Belichick, just in a different way. You know, so far in the playoffs, basically everything they've done has worked, right? Belichick had that, you know, halfback pass. He has a series of weird 4 lineman plays that he's used to great success. Pete Carroll faked a field goal, which, you know, he needed to get back into the game. He had Cam Chancellor jumping over offensive linemen. Like, these coaches have been trying weird stuff all the entire playoffs because they think they can outsmart the other coach and the other team, and it's worked for them the whole time. So I'm looking for a play in this Super Bowl where one of the coaches tries to outsmart the other team, and it just fails spectacularly. If one of these coaches is going to be the tragic hero of the Super Bowl, I think arrogance is their downfall. And I'm just waiting to see which coach it's going to be.
So I actually prefer Pete Carroll's brand of arrogance than I do to Bill Belichick's brand of arrogance.
Really?
I think what you said was right. Pete Carroll's arrogance is, I mean, he's got a certain level of personal arrogance, but he's arrogant about his players. He likes his guys. He believes in his guys, and he'll put them up against anyone, anytime. And he talks about his guys that way.
Right.
Bill Belichick doesn't talk about his guys that way. He doesn't talk about anyone at all, period, including himself, really. But the sense you get with Bill Belichick is that the guys are all totally interchangeable. And you've seen that in the way that they treat their players when someone's kind of not producing or when they do something wrong. There's no sentimentality. He gets rid of them. I think Bill Belichick's arrogance is much more rooted in his own kind of, I think it's a personal arrogance rather than our guys are better than their guys.
Yeah.
And I think that's partly just the culture that he's built versus the culture that Pete Carroll has built in Seattle. I don't know.
Yeah.
If you had to pick an arrogance, I would pick.
I don't know. I'm a big fan of arrogance. I kind of like both of them, but yeah. But you know what I mean though. With Pete Carroll, there's going to be a mistake somewhere by a coach, and you're right. It's either going to be Pete Carroll trusting his players too much, or Bill Belichick, not trusting them enough. Maybe.
Right.
But, we were talking about who's going to cover Rob Gronkowski. Honestly, I think putting anyone one-on-one on him is kind of an arrogant move from a coach. So if Carroll does that, we'll see if it works. Who knows how Belichick's probably going to have something up his sleeve that either works or doesn't work.
Yeah, it'll just be interesting to see whether it's a, in case of emergency break glass, or whether it's, he feels from the start that he has to do something interesting to beat them,
right,
or different to beat them.
Yeah, and we'll know that by which running back he's playing, probably.
Yeah.
If he's playing Blunt, he probably isn't going to do so many trick plays. If he's playing Vereen a lot, he might have to.
It could get interesting.
Yeah, bringing it full circle. Well, thanks so much for coming on the podcast again. We will see what happens.
Absolutely. Happy Super Bowl.
Yep, likewise.
Thanks for listening to the Dear Sports Fan podcast. You can find more podcasts and tons of writing at dearsportsfan.com. If you like what you see and hear there, please subscribe. Thanks to Jesse Fisher for the theme music. He's at jessefisher.com. Have a great day.